I'm next. I'm Josh.
I'm final Sean.
The final Sean. Final boss Sean.
Wow.
Okay. We didn't plan that, and we couldn't have planned it, and it happened anyway.
It's impossible.
That's just what life is like in the Best Friends Club.
Best Friends
Club.
This is two episodes more than Josh did on his other podcast.
No, we're not there yet. This isn't my episode 71 or 72.
That's true.
Oh, but that's
true. Time to fire me yet, boys.
Looks like Josh is back on the fire menu, boys.
Yeah, sure.
But no, we're in no hurry to get rid of Josh. There's no reason to get rid of him. He's bringing listeners in.
There's
he's
a lot of reasons to get
rid
of Josh.
Suck my dick.
Yes, sir, we will. We will suck your dick, sir.
Okay,
yes,
sir. Please follow us on Twitter.
Please retweet us.
Yes, sir.
Twitter, Facebook.
Nope. First segment. We're in the first segment.
Oh, God.
Hold
damn
on.
It. All right.
Sean, what are you reading?
I am still reading The Wise Man's Fear by one Patrick Rothfuss, which is the day two of the Kingskiller Chronicles.
Oh, that's right. These ones.
And it's amazing.
Can you tell us why?
Yes.
It's so amazing that it takes you 2 weeks to read.
Oh, my God.
It's going to take me a lot more than 2 weeks to read.
Looks like Josh is the new Josh. Wait. Sean is the new Josh.
It's going to probably... we'll see. I have a new job coming up that will... give me
bragging.
A new...
Oh, my God.
Wasn't a brag.
A humble brag.
That will...
I'm going to make money for doing a job.
That will require me to commute for the first time in a long time. So, it's 1,000 pages.
Oh, so you actually get more reading time.
A lot more reading
time,
yeah.
Will you get sick doing that, though? Will you get sick on the bus doing it?
Like motion sickness.
Yes. I it's not
Is
just
it
motion
worth
sickness.
It?
Like, I don't know.
Is this a future show topic?
You should listen to podcasts...
Yeah.
On your commute, like Cracking the Spine.
Yeah.
Why would I listen to my own podcast that I edit?
Why not?
I don't know. Maybe
I
edited it.
I listen to the show, and I don't edit it.
But, yes, I know, because you don't... Anyway, so I'm going to have a lot more time to read. But, Josh, to answer the question that you asked, can I explain why it's so good? Yes, because the characters are really well fleshed out, and... There's a lot of beauty in the world that he's created, and there's a lot of we're still going through the main character's childhood.
Okay.
And it's very obvious that there's going to be some downfall coming up at some point. Like, he has to go from where he is now.
Okay.
In his childhood to where he ends up.
Is he like a royalty or something?
No, he's a court magician. He's not a court magician. He's like the most powerful magician in the world.
Okay.
Who, when you meet him in the books, is living as an innkeeper.
That's a good job.
Hiding. Like he.
I like hiding.
Okay. Well, maybe it's the story of you.
It could be.
I don't want to say any more.
I think that's where we're going.
A lot of this is being revealed. In the course of two books.
Okay.
But it's great. They're amazing. If you're into fantasy, if you liked Scott Lynch or Tolkien or George R.R. Martin, read these books.
Who does the Shannara ones? I forget his name.
Terry Brooks.
Terry Brooks.
Shannara.
Zane, what are you reading?
I'm still reading Mongrels by Stephen Graham Jones, which is the werewolf book.
The werewolf book, yeah.
And yes, it is taking me 2 weeks to read. I totally deserve it.
Didn't say it.
I just haven't had a lot of reading time, but...
It happens sometimes. Sometimes you don't get time to read. Sometimes the words you read are long or big words, and you have to look them up.
Oh, and sometimes
you read books that weren't recommended to you by your friends.
For a real second, I actually thought that you were being nice.
I am.
No, you're not.
Wow.
I didn't see that as nice. This is the nice cast, Sean?
No, it's episode 73. This is the Golden State Warriors. All bets are off.
You hate them.
2 weeks in a row with this.
Damn.
Did you get a chance to look it up, Zane? See why it sucks?
Why would I do that?
Okay. Because you do a lot of research.
Oh, that's
No,
true.
I'm not researching basketball.
Oh, can you count research as reading?
Possibly.
I didn't do any research.
So tell me about Mongrels.
I'm like halfway through it, and I still kind of feel like I'm waiting for it to get started.
Ouch. Okay.
Like, I don't...
Yikes.
Maybe I had, like, a false impression of where we were headed. Like, maybe it's my own sort of shortcoming as a reader, but I don't know. Like, I just felt like the way that the book started, like, from the perspective of this young kid who's possibly going to turn into a werewolf. I'm not finished yet. I don't know. Okay. He's got it in his blood. They don't know if he's actually going to transform yet. He's being raised by his aunt and his uncle, who both are werewolves. And the way that it started, I was like, okay, so he's little now, but, like, we're going to progress right through to, like, him being an adult, and that's where we're ending up. And I'm halfway through, and he's still, like, 13.
And he's not a werewolf yet?
No.
He hasn't joined the companions
yet. And I don't know if, like, that's the story. Like, I'm only halfway through, and there's a lot of time for things to change. So I don't want to, like...
jinx it?
Yeah, I don't want to, like, render judgment. But, I mean, it's good. It's totally fine reading, but it's a little, like, I don't know.
As I was editing last week's show, it occurred to me, I don't know that I've ever read a werewolf novel that was good.
That's why I said when I brought up that I had bought a werewolf book to read, I was like, I don't really get into werewolves because I just don't find the lore interesting, and I never encounter a good werewolf story. They're not interesting to me.
Okay, whether it's in books or film or TV shows.
I don't like them. Like, any of the dumb supernatural stuff that I watch, whenever they encounter a werewolf, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Like, it's a cool idea. Werewolves?
It should be the coolest one. It should be one of the coolest ones.
Nah, they're not. It's never interesting.
It should be on
it's
paper.
It's never interesting.
Vampires way cooler than
werewolves. Vampires are way cooler.
Always.
Yeah, but you just said that werewolves should be cooler.
It should
Josh.
Be it should. On paper. Yeah. On paper, it's because you turn into a fucking wolf. That's awesome as shit, dude.
And werewolves are often like, they don't battle with being werewolves. They're like, yeah, I'm fucking werewolves. Yeah, like, that's usually cool how they are. They're, like, they're cool with it. They're open with it. They let people know. Yeah, stuff like that. But like,
it's like the worst superpowers. Like,
I know!
It's like being Jubilee in the X-Men.
Well, I think that's what happens. Like, okay, they turn into a wolf.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
And then, like, it sucks.
And then they bite people and turn them into werewolves.
Yeah.
It's like Jubilee. She shoots lights out of her hands.
Fireworks.
That's her power.
It hurts people.
It blinds them.
No, it hurts them. It's like magical energy.
She had a really cool card, though.
She did have a cool jumpsuit.
Her artwork is always cool.
Yeah, I liked her with the goggles, the 90s glasses. Those were cool.
Weakest X-Men ever.
Well, she was
I mean, her powers aside, her artwork was always cool.
All right. Josh, let's get it out of the way.
I haven't read a lot. I'm still reading Devil in the White City.
Okay.
I'll finish it before the movie comes out. My summer book is going great.
By the time you finish it, Chicago will get the World's Fair again.
Time will have
And somebody else will build another murder hotel. And Josh will be like, wait a minute.
I seem to remember.
This doesn't feel familiar at all because I haven't gotten to it yet.
No, it's a good book. I like it a lot. I just haven't had time to do anything.
You were signing autographs. I saw the time lapse.
I was not signing autographs. Yeah, I was, but not really. Technically, I was.
You were.
Technically.
What do you mean?
The DVDs. So yeah. That doesn't count.
Is that
paid
not
for
an
it.
Autograph?
They paid for it. They already they
People
paid,
pay
they,
for autographs.
They shouldn't have to.
Hey, man, John Cena probably gets, like, a lot of money for that.
For his autograph? Well, I wish I was John Cena.
I wish you were John Cena, too.
How did John Cena
Then I couldn't see you.
Because I wouldn't be here. Because I'd be wrestling with your wife.
That seems like as good as any opportunity to
take
our
first break.
Talking about segues, let's go. Part 2, up next.
Welcome back. Segment 2 of episode 73. Of Cracking the Spine, the podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Zane.
I'm Josh.
Don't confuse it with Cracking the Spine, the TV show.
Yeah, or Cracking the Spine, the series of Chuck Tingle books.
I get it confused with Cracking the Spine, the film strip. Boop. Next segment.
Good one. Let's let that linger for a second.
Hey, it was pretty funny.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Zane, what are we talking about?
Today we're talking about a listener suggestion. I'm going to set a reader suggestion.
Yep.
Well, it probably reads.
Well,
I mean, Josh doesn't.
I know. You never know.
All right.
No judgment.
God damn it.
Whatever.
We got it via our Reddit.
Reddit.com/r/crackingthespinepod Yep. That's what I was going to say.
By Erock Money.
Erock Money?
Erock's Money?
Yeah. E-R-O-K-M-O-N-E-Y.
Erock. Yeah. Erock Money.
Yeah.
That's what you spend when you go to Erock. Good currency.
And they wrote, what books written in the past 5 or 10 years do you think will be taught in literature classes in the future? Will books like The Scarlet Letter, Lord of the Flies, Moby Dick, Importance of Being, etc., be replaced for more contemporary novels?
I don't know about replace.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that out there right now. I don't know that we're going to replace things because we do still read...
Super Fudge.
I was going to go...
We could go one show without Josh bringing up Super Fudge.
Maybe because it's the greatest book ever.
I was going to go The Odyssey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one will ever stop reading that.
Charles Dickens. It's not like... It's not about replacement. I think it's about supplementing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. 5 to 10 years... In the past is, so it takes us back to 2006, right?
Yep.
So what's been written since 2006 that will become
George Bush's autobiography?
Classics.
I don't know. I don't think anything.
It's hard to tell because academia has a really
snooty.
Yeah, they really don't let go of things. We're still teaching novels that you could argue maybe we shouldn't still be teaching.
Right.
Like what?
Ethan Frome.
Oh, yeah. Okay, definitely.
There's a lot of Victorian novels that just,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, any of the Bronte sisters'
books. You know,
books.
They're part of, like, the literary canon, and...
Yeah.
Teachers just don't let go of them.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, we're still teaching... I mean, not that these books don't have a place in the literary world, because of course they do, but, you know, when you're teaching a class and you only have... You know, you can only pick 4 books or 5 books a year or something, we're still teaching... Jane Eyre?
Right.
I have to admit, like, when Hunger Games first came out, I totally thought that they were trying to, like, capitalize on that, like, dystopian, like, child book thing that we have going now. Like The Giver and what are some other ones?
Divergent.
Yeah, like, all the... But, like, people read, like, 1984. What's the other one?
Brave New World.
Brave New World. Like, they was trying to capitalize on that sort of, like, thing. And in the back of my mind, I thought, well, maybe they're trying to make this, like, an updated...
She was trying to get that as the next thing that you read.
Right.
Yeah. But it doesn't have the same overreaching societal impact.
Right.
Like, it's not as... I mean, you know, no offense to Suzanne Collins, because we've dissected these books at length before on this show, but, I mean, she would... hopefully admit that, you know, Hunger Games is nowhere near Brave New World.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be. It was never
intended
to be the next thing taught in a literature class. Now, I think, I would have to check publication dates because I'm not exactly sure when they came out, but I think a couple that spring to mind that I would possibly see being taught in English classes, Life of Pi.
Okay.
Which
I could see that.
They made into... I never read it myself.
Yeah, I never read it either. I didn't see the movie either.
It's about a boy who...
On the boat with the tiger.
Yeah. The ship sinks and he's left on a life raft with a tiger. And about that. The Curious Incident...
No judgment.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night.
That's about the dog who reverse ages.
No. Nope, that's not about that at all.
Oh.
It's actually a really... beautiful novel about a little boy who finds, if memory serves, I read the book, but it's been a while, who finds a dead dog and is trying to figure out how the dog died, but it's written first person from the point of view of a little kid with autism.
That sounds really great.
And I think that, like, if you think about the way childhood is going and public schools are going... there's going to be more empathy
toward that
kind of
more
thing.
More like understanding about it and more like openness, I guess
you
would call it.
Yeah.
Whereas like before, like when I was in elementary school, I remember there was, like, the special needs class, and, like, they would only, like, come in for, like, certain parts of the day.
Yeah.
You know, whereas now they might, as like you said, like, how public schools are going, they might not have those classes anymore for them, so they might need to, like, put them
there
in.
Needs to be some, yeah. There needs to be some understanding. Yes. Like, I don't know.
And like everything else, you know, it all these things need to be represented. I mean, it was rare in school even to read a book by a black person or a Hispanic person. You know, if you weren't reading white Victorian novels, what were you reading? So, you know, like, representation ends up being
I wouldn't important. Say I was reading them, Zane.
I'm laughing only because of how much he amused himself on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zane, I think you're absolutely right. That, like, you know, The Catcher in the Rye caught on because it spoke to, like, that disaffected youth.
Right.
That was kind of the product of its time.
Yeah. Right.
And Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man was the story of the African-American experience, like, at the time it was written. And that book still makes its way into summer reading and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you brought up Chuck Klosterman before when we were talking about this.
When it came, we were talking off air.
Off camera. Yeah. And you were saying that, like, what he says, and like, you kind of are bringing up another thing, that point that he said about, it might not be, like, who you think it's going to be. It could be some Native American kid in the middle of Iowa wrote a book, and that becomes, like, the next thing.
Well, and that's, again, like, it's hard to tell. 5 or 10 years is not really enough time to tell what books are going to have a lasting impression. And I know that some of that can be shaped by teachers, you know, actively picking up newer books and deciding to teach them. But, you know, like, we don't know what's going to have a lasting impression. It's possible in, you know, another 20, 30 years that we will still be talking about The Hunger Games. And for a sixth grade class or whatever, that might be an interesting novel to try and get kids interested in what they're reading. Not because it's some, like, amazing, well-written, perfect novel, but because how do you get kids to be interested in it?
Right.
Which is what, whenever I was taught any kind of modern or contemporary fiction, that's what the teacher was going for. You know, I had a teacher who... we did a semester on Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
And we read that book, and, like...
That's too scary.
Is it the world's best book? No. Yeah. But it certainly got everyone very interested, and we could talk about adapting, you know, books to film and stuff like that, and that kind of stuff has a place in the classroom, and it's great, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with, like, the novel itself, you know, like, the quality of the novel.
No, it's just the discussion
novel.
That it peaks.
Right.
It's the prerogative of the educator to say, this is the book I think can help further the conversation. Like, I took a class my freshman year of college that sucked, and the professor was an ass.
Suck that shit, Professor Ass.
It was
with a name like Professor Ass.
It was,
I mean,
an introduction to fucking English composition class.
Yeah.
The world's worst.
Where
class
one of the things, I shit you not, one of the things we talked about was the Bare Naked Ladies 1 week. That song. It's been 1 week since you look at me, and, like, we dissected that song.
I think you mean BNL.
Sure, I guess that's what I mean. But, like, that's, God, like, what joking. Happens is, you know, the question is, what, from, in 5 to 10 years, what will they be reading?
Yeah.
And to me, that question is, what are 13 to 18-year-olds reading now that when they're 23
they're gonna,
and come out of college and have their teaching degree,
they're gonna say,
will become important to that, for them to teach their students?
But is that the question itself, or is the question bigger? Is the question more, what will stick? What are those 23-year-old teaching assistants going to recommend for kids, and then what's going to
I mean, that is, like, the heart of the question. We are being a little pedantic by, like, starting around it.
I don't know, like, I don't think that's
maybe the time frame given wasn't appropriate.
We're hanging up.
Let's say in 30 or 40 years, what novels that have
Space
been
books.
Released in the last 10 years
yeah.
are...
well, Harry still Potter, going to I mean, be
important. Yeah, Harry Potter
is going to become
definitely
the new, I don't know about the new, or if it replaces the Chronicles of Narnia. But it's like that
God,
same...
God, I hope it replaces the Chronicles. Yeah.
There's way less Jesus.
Way less Jesus.
There's still Jesus in
there. I'm not so sure about that.
It's way subtler.
It's, yeah.
Harry is Jesus.
Yeah, well, yeah, he dies.
Yeah, in the,
he
in
dies
the way
and comes
that,
back
that
and it's
all
predicted.
Main characters in that fashion are Jesus, mm. But it's not an allegory.
Right, it's not a direct, like, here's my version in the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay. we can leave that for another day. Who got Klaxon? Was that me?
You did.
The show.
but, like, Harry will be around for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
I think just by dint of how popular it is,
yeah.
how much of an impact in culture it has had, and how approachable it is for the age group that's reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many doors it opens to things that, again, I'm going to... editorialize here that you should have read before you read it,
yeah.
but you didn't.
No, that's a great point.
Like, it references a lot of other novels and works.
It's that, like, a light version of stuff that, like, came before it, like you said, but maybe you shouldn't have read it beforehand, but maybe it'll get you
into
it.
It's a great stepping stone, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
this is a way to get kids into science fiction and fantasy and stuff like that, and, you know, what else is like this? Well, here's some Tolkien.
Right.
Now you're ready for this.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Now you're ready for 2,000 pages.
Mongrels. Werewolf cop.
Werewolf cop.
Oh, and you mean Lupin. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's in it.
Spoilers. He's a wolf.
Nobody
with a name like Remus Lupin?
Professor Ass?
I don't know.
Professor of the Dark Arts, Professor Ass? He's going to be the bad guy.
His name was not Professor Ass, by the way, guys. I can't remember
just
his name.
Just blow him up. Oh, you don't need
to I have no idea. No idea.
I'm trying to think of what I read in sixth grade. We read The Pearl.
By
don't remember.
I read Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Not that.
Total Jesus
the second
allegory.
Mrs. Giaconda.
What is that?
It's a... I don't even remember. I just remember the time. I think I still have it somewhere, actually. I think
dramatic
I have
reading time?
I'd have to find it. No guarantees.
What's the book where the kid goes to the island and he gets malaria with the slave guy? The K? Is that
the
what
K.
it's called?
There's
the
a
K?
Book called The K. I never read it, but...
I never read that.
That, like, all these books are, like, Hatchet.
Hatchet
was around that time.
Yep.
They're sort
I think
of
that's
about,
when
like,
I read The Giver, too.
Yeah, like, self-determination, like, self-sufficiency.
Tom Sawyer.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I read Tom Sawyer until later.
It's like a weird, like, the idea that we have to keep, the idea, you know, that at in somewhere between 6th and 8th grade, you read, or supposed to read, a coming-of-age novel.
Yeah.
The Outsiders.
But yet somehow you're still supposed to read the coming-of-age novel
from
a grandfather
the
50s,
yep.
From a time period.
Well, that's where I get frustrated. Like, it's not that these books aren't important, but... at some point, we do have to update.
Yeah,
right. Even if somebody makes, like, another sort of version of The Outsiders that isn't them saying words like cherry to mean cool. Like, now I gotta explain that that's, like, a cool...
You know what might make the list within the last 5 to 10 years? Pax, Sarah Pennypacker that I read this year. The Little Boy and the Fox. I feel like that's a book that could stand the test of time, like, in the way Charlotte's Web did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought that for my cousin's daughter, and I was like, get ready.
How old is she?
8, 9.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but, like, it would be nice to, like, if, I mean, again, not replace, but, like, if instead of teaching Catcher in the Rye, we could teach Percy being a wallflower.
Or Fight Club. Or, like something.
Well, that's a good one. That might be the next thing, honestly.
I think that's, like...
Fight
senior
Club, you have to have a
age.
Really cool high school teacher, or it would be in college.
Professor Ass ain't recommending.
But see, like,
that.
Perks of Being a Wallflower, I mean, it's still a little accessible, and you could teach it to, like, an 8th or 9th grade class, and it would be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then you, again, because, it like you were saying, you know...
Me, Josh.
Yeah. Like, when you read Catcher in the Rye, there's so much, it's outdated.
Yeah.
You know, and you go back, and it's like...
It doesn't speak to you the same way.
When you
way.
Read it when you're in 8th grade or whatever, you're like, so, wait, why is he so cool?
It's like listening to, like, music. Like, you know that it's still cool, but it's not speaking to you like the music that you grew up with speaks to you.
Right. Just because it was cool for its time does not mean that it's timeless.
And it still might be cool, and you still might be able to recognize, oh, this is really cool music, but it's not the music that you're like gets you like all viraled up, you know.
Well, kiss especially and vinegar. You know, when you're a teacher and you're facing a class of 30, 40 eighth graders.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Trying to get them interested, like you're already fighting an uphill battle. Yeah. Why make it harder by, you know, telling them that they have to read Wuthering Heights?
I would start by mandatory ZQL break.
For you or them?
Them.
Okay.
And then we read, and then we take nap time. Because shut the hell up, eighth graders.
No, it's I think it's, I know, I don't want to say it's one of the harder questions that we've gotten, but it's certainly one of the ones that like puts us to the challenge becomes,
yeah,
it's kind of unanswerable, and put this show in a
time capsule yeah, and later
open it in 10 years and tell us what we missed, you know,
like Chuck Klosterman said, like you, it might be something that who knows, but out of the stuff that we do know, like, I mean, probably Hunger Games, right? Like, probably, for the most part, because fucking, of course.
Well, again, it's not going to be about how well-written the novel is, but about the impression that it made, like, on society at large.
But I don't think Hunger Games is, like, not to just focus on this, but I don't think it's, like, you are naming, like, really kind of, like, esoteric, like, really thought-provoking, like...
I was.
You, Sean. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. We're like the one about the dead dog, and like, and even Pax, like they're very not normal, like there's sort of a unique perspective of a story.
Well, I think that 1984 will still be read in 2084. Right. I think. I don't know.
I would bet it would.
I think Brave New World will be read in, you know, another 100 years.
Unless you're a Delta.
I don't know that The Hunger Games, which is very similar in tone and in, like, idea, stands the test of time, mostly because, you know, 1984 and Brave New World were not written to be bestsellers. They were written because the authors had something to say.
But that's kind of why I think it's going to...
But the thing about The Hunger Games, it's three books.
But it's entertainment, and people... I think are headed more toward the, well, whatever. It's entertainment, it's fine.
In school?
Yes.
Ah.
I think we're getting real dumb, is my point. I think we're getting kind of not as willing to sort of say, hey, look, I know you don't know this book, and, like, it might be about, like, a boring dead dog or whatever, but, like, we have to read this. I think people are more willing to sacrifice quality for... Yes.
And that's kind of what I was saying. Like, it's not going forward. It's not necessarily going to be about the quality of the writing. It's going to be about the impression that the story, the book, leaves on our society. And like it or not, and I don't like it, but The Hunger Games has made a pretty big impression. Now, maybe that is a crappy example, and maybe it's wrong of us to keep harping on it. But it has
but even made anything a, like that. Though,
it has made a big impression, and moving forward, the chances of it being forgotten may be slim. Now, I don't know that they're going to be teaching it, but again, I can see it being taught in 7th, 8th grade classes when teachers are struggling to keep kids' attention, because it makes more sense to teach something like The Hunger Games and get kids to actually go home and read and do their homework and think critically about something like The Hunger Games than trying to get them to read Hatchet, which in 20, 30 years will be super outdated. It was outdated when I read it.
They're not even going to be using biplanes or whatever, Cessna airplanes.
Like, you know, like it's, as we move forward, I think you're going to see teachers start to reach towards books that kids can access.
I don't know how, I agree with your point that teachers will reach for books that kids can access. I don't know how accessible The Hunger Games is in 20, 30 years. I think that it is very much a product of its time. It's kind of like saying that, like, in 30 years, a film student will have to watch Clueless to understand being a teenager.
Right.
You know, I think that that's all well and good if you were raised in the 90s, but it's not, it doesn't stand the test of time.
Yeah, but we've also been talking about a lot of books that are outdated that are still around.
Yeah.
Yeah, but The Catcher in the Rye is not, I'm sorry, The Hunger Games is not The Catcher in the Rye.
No, and
the
I know
the writing
that
is not on par.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a lot.
But I think as we move away from, this book is maybe a little hard to access, or this book is like a little difficult for you to understand at your age, but it's important that you read it, which is almost every book that I was assigned.
Mm-hmm.
I think instead you're going to find teachers who say, this book is pretty crappy, but you'll be able to get into it and we can still talk critically about it, since that is, it ends up being the core of an English class.
And I think, yeah,
is like, can you just read something
just
and
something,
comprehend it and talk about it and talk critically about
right.
it? Can we develop critical thinking skills and like essay writing skills by talking about books and literature? So it won't matter that in 20, 30 years, if The Hunger Games is, like, not super relevant, because we're still teaching stuff that's not super relevant now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's important is not the, and this isn't necessarily how I feel, but I think we're moving towards what's important is not quality, but that kids can get there.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree with the theory, except that, like, they're not teaching. So if you rewind 30 years, the most popular books 30 years ago were Stephen King, John Grisham, and Dean Koontz. And Stephen King, John Grisham, and Dean Koontz are not taught in literature
yeah.
classes. Nobody is being assigned Salem's Lot, and nobody's being assigned
right.
The Gunslinger, and
I feel
like no one's being assigned.
I had to read The Shining.
Yeah, but, I mean, you went to, it was,
I'm just saying.
Okay, but, like, that was a, it was an outlier.
I guess.
Not that many kids read The Shining. And, again, The Hunger Games is not The Shining.
Yeah.
Suzanne Collins is not Stephen King.
I think we all agree on that point. I think what Zane is saying is the more chances there are of kids not wanting to read those books and teachers more willing to say, okay, that's a shitty book, but we're going to read it anyway, the more chance there is that it will stick and become
yeah.
that book.
I think regardless of what you assign an eighth grader, they're going to think it's shit. If you assign an eighth grader Ethan Frome,
mm-hmm.
or if you assign an eighth grader
that
The Hunger Games, they're going to think it's shit.
I don't know, because I mean, I remember there being a really big difference getting assigned, you know, even a Shakespeare play,
mm-hmm.
and getting assigned Fahrenheit 451.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I remember there being a big difference. I was way more interested in reading Ray Bradbury than I was in trying to dissect Shakespearean sentences.
Right, his fucking language
in,
barrier.
Again, that happened in eighth grade. That's
yeah.
when I was taught both of those. And not that Fahrenheit 451 is, like, super, super relevant anymore. But it is slightly timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Not as best. But...
Whoa.
I really enjoyed reading it, and I did the work for that book, like, furiously, as compared to
yeah.
my Romeo and Juliet packet that I, like, put off, because it was torture trying to do that.
I mean, not to be that guy, but you just called Ray Bradbury timeless while shitting on Shakespeare?
No,
it
she's...
As
no,
timeless
I'm saying...
As
well,
a
I'm not... That, that's not... What I'm saying is that it's not that Shakespeare isn't timeless, and I've said this again and again. Do not teach Shakespeare to fucking middle schoolers and high schoolers. That is not the time to read
yeah.
Shakespeare. Anything that you have to teach and say, by the way, you have to break this down sentence
right.
by
read
sentence because it's not actually written
X.
in English,
yeah.
then all of my Shakespeare work that I had to do in high school was worthless because I didn't retain
right.
any of it because I hated having to do it on principle.
Shakespeare's almost
but
at,
getting
yeah.
to sit and read an interesting novel like Ray Bradbury in eighth grade, yeah, I did the fucking work for it. No, I didn't do my Shakespeare work because it had more to do with what was accessible.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, Ray Bradbury was important for me, but like just as a way of teaching... Don't teach eighth graders Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea.
Shakespeare's kind of a bad example because he's almost so timeless that, like, you don't even need to
and
teach
it's,
him.
Again, it's not that
it.
These books aren't important, but they become more important as you get older or as you get more into academia. Like, when you are just starting out and you're desperately, you're a teacher and you're trying to get kids into any kind of reading. Just read. Just fucking pick up a book. Just do your homework, please. Don't give them Wuthering Heights.
Right. Yep. No, yeah, I think we can all agree with that.
We're still doing that. And so that's, I think that's what Josh and I are getting at. Is like, is it really kind of awful to think about a teacher teaching Hunger Games as like this timeless piece of literature?
Sad.
Yeah. But if a kid reads Hunger Games in eighth grade and goes, maybe I do like reading. Is that so bad?
Yeah. I mean, as the parent of a child, if my kid comes home with Romeo and Juliet or my kid comes home with The Hunger Games, I'm much more engaged as a parent to get them reading Romeo and Juliet than The Hunger Games.
But if you have a kid who is loath to read or even do their English homework at all, and they come home with Hunger Games,
You were not loath to read.
I know that, but when you look at a class of eighth graders and they don't want to do their homework, and English class is the worst, because I was an outlier. I was one of the kids who kind of liked English class. Most kids hate it.
Yeah.
Because it's really difficult to teach, and we end up teaching it exactly the same way that we teach math and science, which is here's the answers.
Right, here's the right answers, yeah.
If we should do a show about English class. If you get the kids even mildly interested by giving them kind of crappy books to read, then who gives a shit? Now they think that they're into reading, and they'll read more. They'll actually do their homework. They might actually remember something.
Okay,
I know it feels weird to go like, yeah, let's teach Hunger Games. Mm. And again,
I don't know
kind what of you, my apologies
yeah, let's
Hunger
not
Games,
keep coming.
Like,
we're not, that, not, none of us are advocating that we should be teaching The Hunger Games.
Right. No, but
or
I think
that's what's
if,
going to be taught in
if,
10 years.
If you are a teacher and your kids aren't doing it and they don't want to read, they don't want to do their Romeo and Juliet packets or whatever, maybe try reaching for a book that is a little bit more accessible. I think that's, we're going to see more and more and more of that. I started to see it when I was in high school.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
And I think that stuff like that, even though, like, no, we never started teaching Stephen King. No, we never started teaching John Grisham. I think we're going to see more of these contemporary novels, like, edge their way into.
You know what I'm scared about, though? Like, one of the summer reading books in our school district for, I think it's 9th grade, it might be 10th grade, is Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Which,
in 20 years,
yeah,
that could just as easily be replaced with Ready Player One.
Oh, God.
Think about it. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
It's a popular sci-fi novel that when the teachers that are teaching now were growing up, it was Orson Scott Card. The kids that are growing up now that will be teaching in 10, 15, 20 years are coming up on Ernest Cline. Like, accessible, you know, has its merits, but...
Well, hopefully, and I'm gonna take a page from you now. I'll be the bridge this time. Hopefully, it's not as accessible because of the just incessant fucking references that they're gonna have to look up.
References like that don't usually end up being timeless.
Well, I was gonna say
that kind of stuff gets outdated really quickly.
I actually wouldn't mind if Ready Player One became like summer reading, as long as there was a critical discussion
about
like what it borrows from,
right,
what it steals from, what
well,
it's
again,
referencing,
this is, I mean, this is,
what is better than it,
this
no,
is,
I mean,
this
no,
is
seriously.
The part of the entire discussion is like anything, any book is okay to teach as long as what you're teaching is critical thinking and reading comprehension.
There it is.
That's it.
And you can teach literally anything as long as what you're teaching is what you're supposed to learn from English class, which is writing skills, reading comprehension, and critical thinking. And, like, being able to present those things in some form or another, whether it's, you know,
and
verbally
a competent
or written
educator
down.
Says, like, this book references these things.
Right.
Go read these things.
Yes.
Talks about these movies. Go watch these movies.
It's like film school. You can watch movies where they break the rules so you know, okay, well, why did that work even though that rule was broken?
Right.
Or
why didn't
it work?
And what was the rule? Who established the rule?
Exactly.
Where did it come from? Yeah, okay. Cool.
We got it.
We did it.
We solved education, guys.
There's your answer, Fish.
E-Rock.
E-Rock cash.
E-Rock money. Fish.
Cash money.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to part three of Cracking the Spine. My name is Josh.
I'm Zane.
Shit.
Me next.
Sean. I'm Sean.
This is the part where we do the stuff at the end. Go.
Very good, Josh.
Wrap it up. Wrap up, Jones.
What do you guys think will be taught in schools in 5 to 10 years?
I just told you.
Not you.
Oh.
Not you. You do that like Josh doesn't know what this segment
no,
is.
No, I do it every time as a joke.
Twitter.
As
Facebook.
Nope, hold on. Wait for it.
My bad.
Listeners out there, tell us what you guys think should be in schools. What do we miss? Because somebody's going to send an email and we're going to go, oh, shit.
Duh,
that's exactly what
yeah. Yep.
It always happens. You're smarter than us.
A lot of you are smarter than us. Not you, but some of you.
Thank God.
You know who you are.
I'm just like a big dumb animal on display.
Yep.
Laugh at my dumbness.
Twitter.
Facebook. Go on the Reddit. Reddit.com/r/
Cracking the Spine Pod.
Cracking the Spine Pod.
Tell them our email address, Josh.
Email address, crackingthespine@gmail.com.
Nope.
Fuck me!
crackingthespineshow@gmail.com is a way to reach us on email.
Yep. At crackingspine is Twitter. Did we do that already?
Yeah. Somebody sent us an email last week, and I feel weird about addressing it, but I have to.
Uh-oh.
And what they said was, if you send me a mailing address,
oh, yeah,
we can have an actual pen and paper correspondence. And I'm just going to put this out there. No.
Why?
Also, we don't currently
let's give
have
your,
a mailing address
let's
for
give
the
them
show,
your address.
So we can start with that.
I've got several fake addresses.
That's my thing. We don't currently have, like, a mailing address.
Yeah.
If it hasn't become evident over the past couple of shows, I'm no longer employed by the Doylestown Bookshop. Love the shop. Please order your books from them.
Nothing's wrong.
Everything we left on great terms. I'm no longer there. I'm starting up with a new company in a couple of weeks. But I don't have an address that I feel comfortable
so if you,
about.
If you send correspondence to the Doylestown Bookshop, they'll probably, like, what, flush it down the toilet?
No, they'll forward. I mean, they'll send it on to me. So, yeah, I guess if you're looking for a way to get to us by email.
That's, like,
send it to the Doylestown Bookshop. I'm not going to say
the most circuitous way to do it.
I'm not going to say the address.
Let's use them as our P.O. box.
It's like our personal Dropbox. I'm not going to say the address. It's totally Googleable.
Yeah.
Is that a word?
Yeah, Googleable. It is now.
Okay.
I think it's on the Twitter, too. If you follow them on Twitter.
Yeah.
Facebook.
Nope.
Cracking the Spine.
You already did that part. So I guess if you have to reach out and touch us.
Facebook. Twitter.
But I mean,
email.
If you have to put something in a mailbox and put a stamp on it,
yeah,
send it to the bookshop, and
sure.
I'll let you know later if I get it.
Let's do it as a test.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens.
Okay.
Don't do that.
No, I like that.
Hey,
yeah.
Whatever.
Okay.
I didn't tell him to do it. Disclaimer, I didn't tell you to do this.
All right.
It's not a disclaimer. So
also, if you're going to reach out to us, and you should, I don't see why you wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
Show suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Oh my God,
wonderful.
We're running out of them.
We're not running out of them.
I want to do English class.
Well,
I want to
do
English class.
We do get a lot of repeat suggestions,
yeah.
Which is part of why it might feel like there's,
listen to the archives,
42
bitches.
Comments on our Reddit master topic list, but... A lot of them are repeat suggestions, stuff that we already did or that we basically already did, like very similar suggestions to past topics. So if yours hasn't been picked, there's a good chance that that's why.
Oh, and another thing I saw on the Reddit the other day is somebody thought that I made up Bobo.
That's
oh, yeah.
Thing.
That like Bobo is
just... Is that regional slang?
I didn't know that it was regional. I mean, I know it's slang.
If it's regional to the East Coast where everything important happens.
It's a big thing. Like, Bobo means like...
It's a big thing?
It's pretty big. It was bigger like before.
Like you wanted Nikes, but your parents got you Keds.
Yeah, Bobo
Nikes. You
got
Bobo.
You got Bobo.
Like you wanted a pair of Levi's and your parents got you...
Wrangler,
thank you. You got Bobo jeans.
Yeah, Bobo jeans.
What did Dr. Pepper got a Shasta?
Bobo.
Oh my God. Both Bobo. Fuck Dr. Pepper.
You want a candy? You got Necco wafers? Fucking
no,
Bobo.
No.
I didn't get in on this one, but we have Necco wafers at the store that my grandparents own.
Josh always gets them for me for Christmas.
That's true.
Ew.
But when we would eat them as kids, we would just spit them at each other. So that's how good they were. Because they would stick on you if you got them right. They would just go, and they would just...
Dude, they're delicious.
They're Bobo.
No!
They're not very good.
That's
no.
What I'm saying.
They're not very good. They're not the worst.
They're terrible.
They're
all
not,
right.
They're not the worst.
Signing off.
All right.
Twitter, Facebook.